I just returned from ETH Boulder and ETH Denver, two back-to-back conferences in Colorado, where I gave five presentations on the importance of privacy. Both were fantastic conferences, and the conversation around privacy was more front and center than I've ever seen it. It was great to see so much mental bandwidth given to the topic from the builders there. But here's the thing, discussions from half the people were great, but discussions from the other half were disquieting. They argued that privacy was impractical, not pragmatic, a holdover from a bygone era of idealistic cypherpunks. We now live in the real world, and the only realistic path forward is to make concessions on privacy. What does that mean? Add back doors, expose viewing keys, build in compliance hooks, implement selective disclosure to regulators, create privacy light, just enough to feel good, not enough to upset anyone in power. The logic sounds reasonable on the surface. We can't let perfect be the enemy of the good. Let's compromise now, ship something that's palatable, and at least get people a little privacy. This is a fundamentally flawed argument. And the reason it's flawed is that the people making it are evaluating the trade-off in a vacuum, looking only at this present moment, without accounting for where we've come from. These people are ceding ground to the forces that have been eroding privacy for decades, and those forces have never once returned what they've taken. Let me explain. There's a concept called shifting baseline syndrome. Each generation of people measures the current situation against what they personally remember, not against what existed before them. So what looks normal to a new generation is actually a deeply degraded version of what once was. The baseline keeps shifting downward, and nobody notices because each generation only sees their own slice. This is exactly how the erosion of privacy works. You can't evaluate whether a privacy trade-off is worth making by looking only at the present moment. You have to look at the trajectory. You have to see the full arc of what's been lost. And when you do, the picture is staggering. Privacy has been all but eradicated, and it gets worse year after year. The Bank Secrecy Act of 1970 and the regime it ushered in afterwards introduced mass financial surveillance as a social norm. Executive Order 12333 in the 80s gave intelligence agencies sweeping authority to collect communications data abroad, which in practice means millions of Americans' calls, emails, and messages have been vacuumed up right along with it. The Patriot Act of 2001 allowed warrantless wiretapping. It expanded the scope of national security letters with gag orders and allowed the bulk data collection of millions of Americans who were suspected of nothing. FISA Section 702, which keeps getting renewed again and again, allows the NSA to vacuum up communications from US tech platforms and search through that data for American citizens, all without a warrant. And the Third Party Doctrine basically eliminates any kind of privacy in the digital age. It came from Supreme Court cases in the 1970s and holds that any information you hand to a third party has no reasonable expectation of privacy. In the internet era, basically everything involves a third party. So this doctrine essentially argues that modern life forfeits your right to privacy by default, which is an insane precedent. These are just things going on in America, but the entire globe has followed suit. Every individual measure is presented as reasonable and a small price to pay for security, compliance, and order. But each one has ratcheted the baseline lower. Here is where we started, and here is where we are now. And at no point along that trajectory have governments or institutions said, well, that's enough. We have all the surveillance we need. They just keep asking for more. We now live under the largest data collection regime in human history. We have built and continue to feed an infrastructure of surveillance unlike anything the world has ever seen. Every year, a $1 trillion industry harvests information about where you go, whom you talk to, what you read, what you buy, how long you linger on a screen, what scares you, what persuades you. This data is packaged, analyzed, inferred, and sold. not just to advertisers, but to data brokers and basically anyone willing to pay. In fact, some of the largest clients are governments all over the world who use this information to target their own populations. This invasion of privacy and overreaching data collection isn't just used by companies profiling us to sell us a better pair of shoes, or social media companies learning about us for the algorithm. In many places, like authoritarian regimes, the machine is used to control dissent before it happens by flagging potentially problematic people as more likely to join a protest movement and then targeting those people. Sometimes the machine is used to shape public sentiment, influence opinions, sway elections, or get entire populations to hate certain types of people by convincing them that those groups hate them. There are countries that publicly broadcast information about citizens whose social credit scores have dropped, and then use those scores to restrict their travel, limit their employment, block their children from certain schools, or cut them off from opportunity entirely. And with the AI revolution, the machine stops being a record of your life and becomes an entire prediction engine. The data that we make concessions on and allow to be collected is dangerously easy to abuse. This surveillance infrastructure has another fatal flaw. It can't be secured. Every year, the number of data breaches hits a new all-time high. Billions of records are exposed, with information we never should have tolerated being collected in the first place, like location histories, medical records, financial data, private messages, biometric identifiers, social security numbers. This information gets dumped into the wild. It ends up on the dark web, bought and weaponized by organized cartels, criminal syndicates, and nation-state hacking operations. Centralized databases are constant targets. And breaches are not a question of if, but when. As John Chambers, the former CEO of Cisco, once said, there are only two types of companies, those that have been hacked and those that don't yet know they've been hacked. And yet, people want to weaken privacy and security further still, demanding even more KYC data to be collected, even though it's been proven repeatedly that no one can keep it safe, or clamoring for back doors into encrypted communications, while knowing full well that they cannot protect those back doors from exploitation. Salt Typhoon, for example, is a Chinese nation-state hacking group that infiltrated the core wiretapping infrastructure of major US telecommunications providers. The very systems built to enable lawful government surveillance became the attack surface. The backdoor we accepted as a compromise to privacy by allowing lawful access laws like CALEA to take hold became the front door for foreign adversaries who have been intercepting Americans' calls and messages at scale. And still, the calls for more backdoors continue. Just one more compromise to keep us safe. I say no more compromise. Those who tell us that we need limits on privacy to achieve mainstream adoption, that we need viewing keys for regulators, compliance hooks for institutions, even more backdoors for governments, they need to stop looking at this current moment in a vacuum and see how far we've already fallen, how low our shifting baseline of privacy has already sunk. Look at the privacy that we used to enjoy, and now look at the kind of surveillance that has since become normalized. We started up here, and now we're down here. More and more privacy disappears every year through just one more concession. Powers that were granted were never relinquished. So-called temporary measures are now permanent fixtures. We are surrendering the last remaining vestiges of private life and calling it pragmatism. It's time to draw a hard line in the sand. Enough is enough. We have to stop giving ground to a force that never stops asking for more. Privacy is essential for a free society, and we simply cannot afford to let people take it from us. Anyway, at the conference I just came from, I had the chance to put this conviction to the test. I participated in a mock debate on a proposition that cuts to this very core of the modern privacy movement. The proposition was that limits on privacy are a price worth paying for mainstream adoption of cryptographic privacy. I argued no, alongside cryptographer Matthew Green. On the other side, Evan McCullen and Wei Dai argued yes. It was a lively and honestly fun exchange. And Matt Green and I ended up winning, by the way. But a mock debate is one thing. Now we actually have to win this battle in the real world. So I'm going to leave you with my opening statement from the debate. And I hope that this resonates with enough people who want to draw a line in the sand alongside me. So here it is. The proposition assumes something dangerous, that privacy is negotiable. That it is a dial we can turn down in exchange for popularity. But privacy is not a marketing feature. It is the condition that makes freedom possible. Here are four big reasons why limits on privacy are absolutely not a price worth paying for mainstream adoption. First, privacy is the condition that makes free thought, dissent, experimentation, and innovation possible. Without it, we lose the ability to protest, to express ourselves, have whistleblowers and dissidents and all kinds of other self-correcting mechanisms in society without fear of persecution. Privacy is something that shouldn't be compromised because it is the foundation of a free society. Second, when we weaken privacy in the name of mainstream adoption, we lower the baseline of what we're willing to accept. Temporary trade-offs become norms. Surveillance that creeps in rarely gets rolled back. Every time we accept a small expansion of surveillance in the name of convenience or scale, that weakened baseline becomes the new normal. Privacy has been decimated over the past decades due to continual compromises in the name of things like mass adoption. It has to stop. Third, when companies claim that privacy limits are necessary for adoption, what they often mean is that their revenue model depends on collecting more data, or that redesigning their platform would be inconvenient. The barrier to adoption is not privacy. It's lazy product design and surveillance-based monetization. Usability versus privacy is a false dichotomy. We don't say seatbelts are complicated, so we removed them for mass adoption, or fraud protection slows down transactions, so we eliminated it. Safety and usability are engineering problems. Privacy is also an engineering problem, and one that we have to solve. Finally, there are security risks of compromising on privacy. Systems that collect, profile, share, and embed personal data into their core architecture expand the attack surface for the users of these systems. These data troves are high-value targets for hackers, foreign adversaries, criminal networks, and insider abuse. History is filled with massive breaches where millions of people had their information exposed because the system was designed to hoard data. In cybersecurity, one of the most basic and powerful principles is data minimization. The proposition frames this debate as privacy versus adoption. The real trade-off is privacy versus concentrated systemic risk. Weak privacy increases breach risk, insider abuse, state leverage, geopolitical vulnerability, and in an AI-driven world, it increases the scale and automation of exploitation. In closing, privacy isn't negotiable. It's the boundary that prevents mainstream adoption from becoming mainstream control. Mass adoption without privacy produces centralized power, behavioral manipulation, and democratic fragility. This debate is not about whether limiting privacy can accelerate growth. It's about whether trading long-term freedom for short-term scale is a price that we should be willing to pay. And the answer is no, because what's at stake is security, freedom, and human dignity. And the cost of losing that in society for future generations is too high. Ladlow Institute is a non-profit research and media institute that helps people reclaim their privacy in the digital world. If you'd like to support our work, visit ladlowinstitute.org/donate. And a huge thank you to everyone who already supports us. We couldn't make these videos without you. Your support keeps this channel free and it helps more people get the tools and knowledge that they need. So who do you side with in the debate? I would love to hear your thoughts. These aren't questions that we can leave to policymakers and technologists to answer behind closed doors. If privacy is going to survive in the digital age, we need more people like you in the conversation. So let me know in the comments.